Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Teaching Here and There, the podcast about hybrid teaching in higher education. I'm Dom.
And I'm Ivan.
And I'm James.
And today we are bringing you a conversation from across the ocean. We are dividing two oceans and we are talking to, we are bringing in the American perspective. Let's jump straight in.
So welcome, everyone. It's great to have you on board. I'm glad you're enjoying the sun in Florida. So if you could perhaps just introduce yourselves and just tell us what you're involved in at the moment at your respective institutions. Perhaps over to you first, Julie.
Hi, I'm Julie Johnston. I'm the Director of Learning Spaces for Indiana University, University Information Technology Services. Our teams design, install and support all of the classrooms across Indiana University, as well as our informal spaces. So we lead the design for all of the AV systems, as well as we design our student spaces that incorporate innovative technologies such as 3D printing, virtual reality, augmented reality as such. We also have the teams that lead the collaboration technologies for the campus, which include all of the technology to that we're using here, you know, that we've needed across the pandemic, the Zooms and the Teams and all of the other online collaboration tools that foster collaboration.
Great, thank you very much. Over to you, Don.
Sure, thanks. I'm Don Merritt. I'm the Director of the Office of Instructional Resources at the University of Central Florida in Orlando, Florida. My office is also the full AV integration unit for the university. So we do audio video design, install, commissioning support from soup to nuts, as we say, for learning spaces, conference rooms, but pretty much anywhere where we do AV on campus, we are the AV experts for campus. If we bring in folks from the outside, we're the ones who manage those relationships. We also are very closely aligned with our Faculty Center for Teaching and Learning and our Center for Distributed Learning. So the three of us all have offices co-located in one space here on campus to make sure that the missions of all three of those units are as well aligned as they can be.
Great, thank you. And Mark.
Hello, everyone. Mark McAllister, Director of Academic Technology at the University of Florida, about 2 hours north of Orlando from where Don is. We are a large research university. I am in the University of Florida Information Technology Division, so I'm responsible for all of the IT resources for teaching and learning and end user support. So we have everything from the AV installations team, classroom support team, e-learning team. We have a Center for Instructional Technology and Training that does faculty support from everywhere from starting out with mapping courses to creating learning objectives and designing courses along with faculty, as well as more IT-oriented things such as supporting collaboration technology, our IT help desk, and many of those types of end user support operations for the university.
So very nice to meet you all. Thank you very much for those introductions and those contexts. Let me take you into the topic of this podcast, which of course is hybrid teaching in higher education. And again, for the sake of it, I'm going to clarify what we mean by that. That is teaching contexts in real time where students are placed in the room and online at the same time, and teachers could also be as well. So mixed mode, multimodal, high flex, hybrid, you know, all those different range of terms. It's the sort of combination of the real-time aspect that we're focusing on there. Could you tell us a little bit about your experiences of synchronous hybrid teaching and whatever angle you have on it?
Sure. So I can speak from my full-time responsibilities as director of the office, but I can also speak as someone who's been teaching for the past couple of semesters and ended up having to teach hybrid for a little while last semester. So I'll start with the university pretty early on in the pandemic, as we were trying to figure out when we were all going to come back to campus, what it would look like. We knew that some sort of hybrid solution was probably the way we were going to go. So our office went through and outfitted as many rooms as possible, classrooms, labs, conference rooms, with cameras and microphones. And I think the final total was somewhere around 340 rooms were addressed this way at all of the university's campuses. So that was not every classroom or lab, but it was the ones we had worked with the registrar's office to identify as most likely to be used when we came back on campus. So we were trying to concentrate our efforts in those places where we knew they would get the most use. Overall, it was pretty successful. One of the things that we focused on for a variety of reasons was making sure that the technology that we put into the rooms was familiar or at least low touch for the faculty who were in the rooms. So we actually used standard consumer grade webcams in a lot of spaces because it was something they were used to looking at. It was also something we could source, and getting equipment at this time was a very, very difficult thing to do. So we made that decision and did it in such a way that the faculty member, if they needed to move the camera around, they knew what they looked like, they knew how they worked, they could do whatever they needed to do with that in the room, turn it to look at them, turn it to look at the students, whatever they needed to do. And then just a PZM microphone on the desktop so that it was out of the way, no touch, they didn't have to worry about that. And that worked pretty well, especially for the first several semesters. Now, obviously, as we've gotten further into this, we are upping the game on our technology decisions. We're putting in full PTZ cameras, higher quality microphone systems as, again, we can source material, but what we're doing is designing this just into our classroom standard across the board. That makes the most sense to do this going forward. Regardless of how the pandemic ends, we know that hybrid is in some form or another here to stay, and we can talk a bit about that more later too. As someone who taught from a hybrid point of view, I both had to travel and ended up in quarantine for 1 week during my semester last semester. And my students were in the lab and I was at home. And at that point, because it was so far into this, it was a pretty seamless experience, I think, for everyone. Not perfect, obviously, but we were still able to have the conversations we would have normally had in class. We were still able to work on some of the same things we were going to do. There's always some lab time associated with that. So from my experience, it was not as disruptive as it might have been early on when we were all still trying to figure out how this technology worked and what were some of the best ways to interact with each other.
So 350 rooms, installing them and teaching with them as well. That's pretty ample experience to bring down.
I should probably mention that, yeah, UCF is a large university. We have over 70,000 students enrolled, graduate and undergraduate. And we are across, I think at this point, 11 different campuses across Central Florida. So we've got a big footprint.
It's a substantial perspective to bring to the conversation today. Thanks, Don. Julie, let's head to you. Your experiences with synchronous hybrid teaching.
So Don and I have similar roles. So some of the themes I hear, I experienced also. We have about 120,000 students across many campuses across the entire state of Indiana. I was focused during the pandemic on really assisting with all of the classrooms across all of the campuses, although my responsibilities are for the main campus of Bloomington, Indiana, and Indianapolis, Indiana. The first step that we had in the process was really just trying to see where we were. We needed to code all of the classrooms. So we went from a classroom database of about 350 to 500 records to 1,200 records. We were incorporating a database that had all the departmental spaces, any space we could possibly use into that database. And then we determined what were we going to do. So we coded the rooms as introductory, intermediate, or advanced video conferencing so that the users and the registrar would be able to identify, here's our spaces that are already really set up well for this type of modality. Here's what we need to address. And we installed probably over 500 webcams and audio systems. Similar to what Don had to do during this time. The interesting part to this is that really we knew that we were addressing this not in the way we normally or intentionally do, because of the time frame that we needed and the finances of it. So what this has done for us is allow us to stop and reflect and really rethink our classroom, similar to Don. We launched a classroom called the Alcove, which is our sandbox classroom, which allows us to untether the instructor. We don't feel like in a high flex environment, the instructor should stay at the podium. The instructor needs to be immersed with the students that are on site so that the camera can see both the instructor and the students well and not be, one or the other. And so the systems that we have now in the Alcove that we want to actually scale to all classrooms connect the high-end audio and PTZ cameras connect to their personal laptop when they walk in the room instead of more of the formal, I'm going to log into this PC on the side of the room. The other conversation we're having is about collaboration and communication of content. So if the instructor is up at the board and a whiteboard, how well can you see that at home? And so we're finding success with the whiteboard AI cameras, which then can stream the content real time to the students at home. So that's just a couple of AV adjustments that we're making, as well as student audio. The biggest complaint or the most, biggest complaint we've had is the students at home can't hear the other students. They can hear the instructor, but they can't hear the other students. So our systems now consider audio pickup through the entire space. In addition to that, some of the other things we're doing is helping them with strategies. What kind of strategies so that the students at home feel part of the class? What about a Zoom wall? We're talking now about some of the spaces where the instructors are asking if they can see, they can bring the students into their classroom that are on site. So we'll have a Zoom wall as well as the content and thinking about how can we bring that in. In addition, early on, we created a video to give the faculty members a chance to see what it's going to feel like from a student at home. And we suggested them do some of their own scenarios. Go into the classroom, have someone off site, and really, how do you feel when you're in this experience and how can you improve the process? So that's a little bit about what we're doing.
So one of the things I didn't realize at the onset of this recording today was how much scale would be a part of this conversation as well. I mean, both of you have given some incredible numbers from beyond what we've been thinking of as well. Thank you, Julie. That was really, really interesting. Mark, how about yourself?
So University of Florida, we are the small institution of the lot. We only have a little over 60,000 students. So we had very, very similar conversations and experiences that Don and Julie just related. At the onset of the pandemic, obviously, the focus was on the emergency conversion to online delivery. And then as the months and semesters went by, we moved many students and courses back into the classrooms, first in a distributed low density manner. And then of course, starting back in August of last year at full density again. But I think the most important thing that we saw during that transition was that we needed to be flexible in terms of allowing faculty and students to be remote at any time. And no one knew in advance when that was going to happen. So it was incredibly important that everything be set up, ready to go, and all of the equipment be as ubiquitous as possible across all of the different facilities. We have about 300 general purpose type classrooms and probably another 100 or so more specialized labs and other types of learning spaces that are still scheduled for courses. And so we work with many of our colleagues that were out in our distributed colleges to make sure that their spaces were set up, sometimes very unique circumstances in the performing arts, engineering labs, types of instructional scenarios that are sort of different from what you'd expect in a general purpose classroom, and very similar experiences to what we had just talked about in terms of the technology availability and particularly the audio. So we had all of the platforms we needed were all set up in advance. All of our classrooms were set up for a base level of conferencing. So from day one, you could walk into any room and do it at a level. And then as time passed over each of those semesters, we rolled out first to, I think, 75 or so classrooms in the first semester, and then eventually to all of them, more advanced audio systems and cameras, and making sure that even our smallest rooms had two TVs or projection screens so that the students could see local content as well as the other remote students. And so from like 20 years ago, the first conference presentation I did about classroom design, I was really focused on keeping it simple, keeping it standard, keeping it ubiquitous. And that lesson, I think, you know, two decades later still holds.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Mark. I mean, one of my favorite words is appropriate in this case. And I think that's the same thing. It's continuity, ubiquity. And as Don said, when you first started talking, it's this idea of familiarity, because it's been a very, very tense and difficult time. I'm very impressed with the speed with which you've rolled this out across your respective universities, especially as Don said, considering the scale.
Waves of iteration, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, did you have access to campus rather than just being strictly locked down?
We did, yeah. My team, we were only completely remote for maybe 6 weeks. And then we had projects that were waiting in the wings for that summer anyway, and no one else was on campus. And so when we got the go ahead to start coming back, we did so in a very structured way, you know, keeping the teams remote, making sure everyone was safe. The biggest issue we actually ran into was with external contractors on getting some of our projects done. But we could also get all of that work done because there was no one else here. Mm. So we had complete access to the rooms, complete access to campus. It was good and bad at the same time.
Yeah. Well, let me just take this from the angle of the practitioner, yeah? Because you are all in these important positions. You are setting up the things for us, yeah? And I know in aviation and flight operations, you set up all these things for those important people and the sharp end to avoid all the mishaps and the accidents and incidents. So I'm listening to Mark mentioning that K-I-S-S-U or something like that, keep it simple and ubiquitous and all these things. I'm listening to Don about the scale of the things, but what I loved hearing from Julie was basically the fact that you have thought of us on the sharp end and you created the video, how it looks like from the user's perspective. And that is what we sometimes forget when we are standing on the lectern and when we are presenting to people who are not in the same room like us. So with your experience, so many months or maybe even years in this particular type of activities, what would be the key considerations to tell academics in preparing or planning for hybrid teaching itself? So for example, you wouldn't put a pilot to sit in a cockpit without being type rated, and you would give him some user manuals for the aircraft itself. So how would you think, and what do you think is critical for the academic to be ready to hit the ground running when he or she needs to do that? Julie?
I'll start. So you wouldn't fly a plane unless you knew what the plane was capable of doing. And you would put the best or the most advanced pilots with the most advanced planes. So similar, the first advice I would give is that to know your classroom and know the limitations and or functionality of that classroom. If you're going to be teaching in a high flex modality, mm-hmm. Work with your departments to get in the space that is better equipped to ensure that your students have a good experience. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, all of our classrooms can do this, all of us, all three of my colleagues, but other, some classrooms are better than others, just like mm-hmm. all planes can fly,
of course.
But some have TVs and you get to watch movies. So, you know, I would say that know your classroom, go in ahead of time, try out. And, you know, like I mentioned before, do some scenarios. That's the first step is understand. And if there are limitations, try to figure out what you can do to ensure that those limitations don't hinder your students so that your students still have success. And so, for example, if all you have is a static webcam, then maybe you use online cloud collaboration and you opt not to go to that whiteboard in the front of the room where they can't see. Mm-hmm. And, or maybe you call on those online students and be intentional first before you call on the ones in the room just to bring them in and capture their attention.
Yeah.
Maybe another set of advice would be when you go into some type of collaboration mode, the online students go into their own rooms and then the students on site collaborate so that you're not trying to force some type of online collaboration with on site that doesn't work well with the technology.
Indeed.
So that's just a few little advice that I have.
Yeah, and I agree with you. This afternoon, I had the same situation. It was 12 people in the class and I asked, and actually it was very, very intentional. I asked who is in a position to talk to me from the classroom. And they said, there are five of us in the classroom. So we said, you are a group. And then exactly. The balance was the online group and that worked very, very well. Yeah, great. And just Mark, for example, did you have something similar to this video or have you had an intentional effort to hear from people as a feedback after this first wave, maybe of more wide application of the hybrid teaching in your situation?
I think listening to what the students are telling the faculty and listening to what the faculty are telling us in the support role is really critical to being able to continue to evolve and understand what that experience is. So we had many opportunities to work with faculty as they were first beginning to use this methodology and actually put a instructional designer, a technician in the Zoom call with the students so that they could hear and understand, well, is there an echo coming from that room that's making it hard to hear? Are the students in the back not well covered? Are the cameras not pointed in the right place? You know, so just understanding what sort of challenges students may be experiencing to make sure that no student, whether they're in the room or remote, is forgotten about or gets discouraged because they are not being engaged or able to participate the way they feel like their peers are able to participate in the class.
Indeed. No, it almost sounds to me like a reporting system of improvement that was like a cyclical process in your case. Yeah. And Don, with the sheer number and actually the attention to detail we've heard from you of improving the technology as it moved, would you think that this is important for the academic to know beforehand, or it's just going to be intuitively better sound and better accessibility for the students on the other hand?
So both, we want it to be as intuitive as possible, but we like to make sure that faculty are informed when they walk into these spaces. And like both Florida and Indiana, our Center for Distributed Learning created a lot of faculty development based around teaching remotely, teaching hybrid. So there were videos, there was actually an online program they could work through before they actually got to the course that not only dealt with the technology, but also with restructuring their class around some of the affordances or not of the technology, right? Mm. So you while the technology is part of what you do, the technology is not going to solve all of your problems.
Indeed.
You need to think through your actual methods during class and which of those are going to need to adapt. So there was a lot of conversation with faculty around helping them make that transition, understanding what affordances they did have with the technology, and then going from there.
And probably function of the size of the class as well.
Definitely the functional size of the class. We've got some advantages in that some of our larger classes had a bit of experience teaching remotely just because we didn't have classrooms large enough to fit some of these courses. So we've got a little bit of experience with it. I think that was an advantage UCF had, is that we've got a lot of experience with doing things online. So I think for our faculty, it was, for a number of our faculty, it was less traumatic than it may have been for folks in other places. But even those that did have some experience with it, we tried to make sure that they felt heard and supported when they walked into these rooms. Because if they didn't feel that way, their students could tell, and that was going to impact the teaching and learning experience across the board.
Yeah. No, I have to tell you, due to the COVID infection, I had to stay home this week. And it's really a good feeling that you've been immersed in the hybrid before, because you walk in a virtual classroom without too much of a stress, but you can feel a difference. Yeah. So it's good to know that you have offered to the academics so much of a support.
It's good to hear somebody talking about consideration of affordances in design. It's a sort of underestimated factor in these things, very worth bearing in mind there. Thanks for bringing that one up, Don. James.
I feel that we've touched on quite a lot of what I was going to put to you in the next question, which was how can Centres for Teaching and Learning effectively support staff with this mode? And I think you've covered it pretty well. I'm going to move on to a question we've put to other guests, which is imagine an academic, maybe someone you know, at your institution, and they're about to teach a hybrid class for the first time. What piece of advice would you give them? Maybe start with you, Mark.
I think the most important thing is what we were just talking about, making sure that we're confident and we understand the technology in the room ahead of time. And so the way that we found was really successful with that was, of course, we produced all sorts of videos and textual comment to help people understand what they would need to do, both from a pedagogical standpoint and from a technological standpoint, to be successful. But then to actually go to the classroom, meet a technician and or an instructional designer in the room, and get comfortable actually doing it, do a run through, make sure that all of the things that you think will happen are what actually happens on that first day, and that you can gracefully do the things like turn the mute on and turn the mute off and select the correct camera and all of that, so that you don't lose time thinking about those mechanical things that are in the classroom. You really need to think about it like riding a bike. You know, as you know, academics spend time learning how to teach effectively in the classroom, and you get used to that. And then all of a sudden, if you change some things, then you have to start devoting some time that you would normally be focused on your students just to manage what's happening with the technology or something like that. And so I think it's really important just to spend that time with a colleague, a technician, other instructional support professionals to really to get comfortable with the delivery in that new hybrid environment. And we saw time and time again, the folks that did that were very successful from the get-go, whereas some folks that didn't take those steps had more challenges and then more responsive calls for help from the classroom or other kinds of struggles.
Yeah, that's a really interesting and a very good point. Something that we strive to get staff in front of new spaces or new staff in front of spaces before they start teaching. You know, you need to walk before you can run, especially with hybrid technology. I don't know whether you're able to mandate that or just strongly recommend it. I mean, how have you managed in Central Florida, Don, with getting staff to try before they buy, but you know, in terms of this advice idea as well?
Yeah, so it's we can't mandate, but we do strongly encourage. But I'd also say, because of the work we've done with, you know, instructional design supporting faculty over nearly 20 years at this point, we've got a culture around that. So, you know, I think people are comfortable reaching out, hey, what am I doing, this and that. The first thing I would tell a new faculty member, you know, walking into this space is, and it sounds cliche, but don't panic. We've got some experience doing this. We can help you with this. Let's sit down and work through this together. This does not have to be a bad experience. It may be uncomfortable, especially at first, but I think if we work together, we can find a way to make it work. And I, just as an aside, I'd also like to say that you're talking to three very large schools, but there are lots of schools out there, much, much smaller than us. People I've talked to just this week, schools, 2,500 headcount, whatever, who may not have the same number of resources that we do, but they have staff that are just as dedicated to making sure that this experience is good for everyone. So regardless of the size of your school, I would almost guarantee that there is someone there who can help you. And it may not be obvious who that person is at first, because they may not have an instructional design department or a formal AV department, but I can almost guarantee there's someone there who can help you make this transition if this is your first time getting into a classroom like this.
So it's scalable, essentially.
It is scalable. And in some ways, the smaller schools, I think, can be a bit more hands-on.
I guess there are no people, weren't they?
Quite possibly, but there have also been people who have stepped up to fill in some of these gaps who did not have these roles before, right? So, you know, I think one of the things that we've learned over the past couple of years is that there are experts in things that we may not have realized we needed at the time. And so some skill sets may have become more valuable at your institution, especially a smaller institution, than they were a couple of years ago. So, you know, don't expect that these things are just happening at the larger schools. I know they're happening at smaller schools too.
Learning to fly everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Julie, I'm just interested in your take on this question in terms of advice. Maybe it may be a new academic or someone new to Indiana.
Sure. So I'll take a different spin on it. I would have given the same advice, obviously, because my colleagues and I have similar roles, but I have another set of advice. I would give them the advice that they need to be strategic in what is planned for the actual classroom versus what they can do online. Some of the activities maybe they've done before don't translate well. I'll give you the example that video has never been more important now than ever. We have faculty members who are streaming their classes, but also just creating videos, small short video vignettes that the students can watch and interact with. We've just launched a new tool called PlayPosit and had more people attend the webinars to learn how to use this tool that allows you to create small videos that are more interactive and engaging and allows for checkpoints, stop checkpoints, checkpoints for students of check for understanding. But what can you do to engage the students that way and then save your class time for what works well?
So more of a blended learning approach.
Absolutely.
It seems that from what the three of you are saying and from our experiences at City University of London is that the pandemic has forced a change, but with the creative problem solving, that's not just in terms of tech, you know, whether you're throwing in a webcam or not. I mean, that does the job, but it's how appropriate that is, as Mark was saying, but also the delivery. And I think we've had that before from previous guests, that it's not just about the tech, it's about the how you use it and how you use the session.
Absolutely.
I think a previous conversation a couple of months ago, we were talking about really it's the pedagogy of hybrid teaching that probably we're moving to, and we probably, it sounds like you have moved to your three institutions. The technology's grown organically over the time in terms of, as Don said, equipment availability, resources, but the developing pedagogy, maybe I think it was Cecilia from University of Nottingham said something about developing a pedagogy of hybrid teaching as in its own right, as opposed to, well, it's a bit of face-to-face, it's a bit of online. And blended learning, it's been around a long time, but that has an impact on it as well.
I think what we're seeing is a convergence of a lot of things that we've all, to your point, have all had for a long time. Even the distance learning, you know, video classrooms connecting each other. We've got some experience teaching others at a distance, even synchronously over video. I think now the technology has gotten to a point where now it's not just one-to-one, but one-to-many and many back to one. In some ways, you could think of it as a deprivileging of the classroom as the space where learning happens, and more that teaching and learning is really becoming ubiquitous to all of our technologies across the
world.
One thing I would encourage everyone to is don't compartmentalize the lessons you're taking from this and not apply those to other models of teaching or other environments of teaching and learning. A lot of the tools we're using to support hybrid, Zoom, for example, has a lot of applicability outside of a hybrid course. I've been bringing in guest speakers to my class with Zoom, which is something we could do before, but how many more people are doing it now? Because we all know how to use it. Right. Yeah. So don't pigeonhole what happens in these hybrid rooms. Let's take these lessons and expand them out to all of our other teaching and learning spaces too.
Thanks, Julie and Don really hit on a point there that blended learning is not a or with hybrid learning. It's a possibility for any type of instruction. And so you can, if you're teaching a fully online class, there's things that you can do that are like blended learning or like hybrid. The same thing applies if you're teaching a completely on-premise class, that you can bring in hybrid modalities or teach in a blended structure. So there are lots of different varieties that are useful in different disciplines, different individual courses, or just indicated by the specific situation that an individual faculty member or class might find itself in.
Yeah, so we've been wanting this for years. We've been wanting faculty that have an advanced set of skill set and that are asking for how can we do this? And we have it now. And so it's a really exciting opportunity where these tools that we have available, they want to use, they're asking. There's a new kind of rejuvenation and excitement around trying to enhance student learning with the technology now.
Yeah, suddenly finding a converging of all of the different streams and strands of the possibilities in digital education all coming into one.
Well, I've been in a simulator, flying simulator last weekend, and I've been talking to a guy who has been a flight engineer just 8 years ago, so third member of the cockpit crew, responsible for the engines and for setting up the parameters on the aircraft. Early 80s, we have got two member flying crew with the computers as a third member flying crew. So I'm thinking now, we hear about Zooms, we hear about pedagogy that is being developed. Can we see the future of the higher education in terms of these hybrid delivery models? So basically, is there any indication which direction this is going to go? So us academics start reading some For Dummies books, so we are getting prepared for what's coming. Julie, maybe you can start with this.
Well, like you say, you don't have a crystal ball, but I feel like higher education is transforming into more of a student choice, where that's what the students are asking for. They want the choice to attend or be online and or maybe attend and then be online. And how can we respond to that? They will be more successful if their choice is heard. And so, you know, maybe we'll see that the classes can be more flexible and not just coded with this is a face-to-face or this is an online, but can the faculty just work with the students and create this, I don't know, experience for them that makes them feel empowered?
That's a really, really good point. And it's something that's come up in learning space development, which I'm sure Mark will be familiar with conferences that we both attended, is this idea of the relationship, you know, and hybrid teaching and the tech that we've integrated is changing the relationship between the academic and the student and the space. And I wonder, Don and Mark, what your thoughts are on the question that Ivan's put about, where do you see the future?
So I think flexibility is a really important keyword in that discussion. So we've been talking about that, as you mentioned, in classroom design for a long time. The moving from classroom layouts with fixed furniture and stepped floors that had zero flexibility to rooms with flat floors and flexible furniture. And that is just in the classroom. And then when we talk about other aspects of flexibility, as they apply to the hybrid learning model. If you go back to the original research on HyFlex that was long pre-pandemic, it was 100% student-oriented pedagogy, and it was designed to allow the students to make the decision, as Julie was just talking about, on how they are going to participate in the course that particular day. And that was for, you know, obvious and important student success reasons that became important for almost every student on the planet in 2020. And so I think that as we think about how we evolve this in the way we support and deliver instruction is really focusing on the students and their success. You know, we've really, you know, years ago, there was a lot of research and focus on teaching excellence and improving the teaching. And then we started talking about learning and focusing on that. And now we're really focusing on not just the learning, but the students' success. And I think that that's the, and that means that we have to adapt in many different ways to be able to deliver what the student needs.
Mark, if I just may ask you, you said for students to have the best possible outcome. Have you done any research in past, let's say, year, 2 years, or maybe before even, because some of your institutions have been applying this type of delivery for a longer time, whether the projected success of the students aligned with actual outcome of their studies if they opted just for a pure hybrid or stayed in the mix?
I don't think we've done any specific A-B research here with those particular cohorts, with all of the usual confounding variables that we have going on with any type of educational treatment research. But I think there has been a very much strengthened discussion about learning analytics and understanding what's happening to the learner as they engage with courses, with faculty, and with support services of the institution, and really starting to understand what that student journey is like from applicant to university to graduate. And I think that whole emphasis on data analytics in the learning environment is what really is going to enable us to understand many of those things much more clearly in the future.
No, I think it's needed, like in aviation as well. Don, how about you? What do you think? Where do we go in this? What would be the resolution of the cameras, or maybe the sensibility or sensitivity of the speakers and the microphones in the new classrooms?
Right. So one of the things you can almost guarantee is that the technology will evolve in more useful ways. We're seeing that happening rapidly now. Every week there's something new coming out. But I don't want to lose that thread that you and Mark were going with there, and that's some of the research and what's happening. I know there's been some of it going on, but there's also a lot of debates over here in the higher ed community about some of the research that's been done, like with online learning and those sorts of things in the past. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a debate about the efficacy of what's been done over the past 2 years. And we need to remind everyone, a lot of what's happened over the past 2 years was an emergency situation. Everyone adapted and rolled with whatever we had available, but that doesn't mean that what we've done over the past 2 years is the right way to do it.
Indeed.
And there are a lot of people who will continue to do that research on the student outcomes that Mark's talking about. Not only the outcomes, but how do we work with our faculty to develop their teaching skill sets to take advantage of these.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
there are also larger questions too about student success. You know, which students are successful and why? Is it because they have good access to infrastructure and resources at home?
And
if they don't, then how do we as institutions make sure that we are not creating tiered student success out there accidentally by implementing some of these things? So there's a lot of research yet to be done. And I think technology plays a large role in addressing some of those concerns, but it's really up to those academic researchers and those who are interested and concerned about these outcomes to really lean in now and start doing some of that research.
Yeah.
So that we do guide what the future is supposed to be as successfully as possible.
No, indeed. I think we have to be informed because we are usually taking the best common denominator. And there are some people who are disadvantaged by sheer fact. So I think that is very nice that you mentioned that. Thanks for this, Don. James.
Just before we come to a closing question, just to come back, just respond to you, Don, and everyone else, that I think we all should give ourselves a big pat on the back. Because this has been incredibly challenging 2 years. We've made it up as we've gone along. No one, there's no rule book. We've had problems with staff being ill, staff not being able to go on campus, with delays in technology, the worldwide shortage of semiconductors. I think universities have done an incredible job, unprecedented. And I think we can forget that when we perhaps being overly critical about what's being developed. Don't think we should lose sight of that. And if no one else, we'll give ourselves a pat on the back.
Good call for doing that, James. And plenty more research to be done in this area as well. I love these conversations because I learned so much from you as our guests on here. I'm going to wrap this conversation up with a couple of closing questions. And these are ones that we ask of all of our guests as well. So let me do the same for you three. The first one is a simple question. You imagine a spectrum. It's our spectrum that's a little bit of an imperfect analogy, but we have flight on one end as something that you want to run towards, and fight on the other end as something that you want to get away from. You cannot stand the idea. So flight or fight on both ends. And in terms of hybrid teaching, where do you put yourselves?
I'm going to premise it by saying, yes, I fly towards it in the terms of I'm committed to ensure that we study and ensure that our classrooms can create this really great, rich learning environment where students at a distance and students on site have a quality experience. So I don't run away from that challenge. I'm running towards it with the premise that we can make it better for our faculty.
Good answer. Don?
I'm going to say pretty much the same thing. Maybe not running towards it, but walking briskly towards it. but with that whole idea that in order for this to be successful, it has to be learner-centered. And so we can't let the technology drive some of our decisions. We need to let our needs drive the technology decisions. And so long as we're moving in that direction, then that's a direction I want to go in.
That's great. That's a thread that's run throughout most of these episodes as well. Brilliant.
So as the pilot, you're talking to your passengers all along the way.
Yeah.
Mark. And hopefully the passengers are talking to us.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think as Julie and Don said, it's our responsibility to be ready for whatever everyone needs. And so we have to be able to provide solutions for hybrid instruction and for every other type of instruction that requires our online and classroom resources. So we have to be ready for all of that. There is no option for running the other direction. We have to be ready for that. And, you know, of course, no one ever knows, you know, if we may need to do similar sorts of exercises again on a massive scale. So we have to be ready for anything that ever comes at our institutions and be ready to support that and help students, no matter what the situation is, get to the end of their educational journey successfully.
That's great. Thank you very much. A very quick one to close, and I'll go back in the opposite direction. What's one thing that you needed to say in this podcast that you haven't said so far?
I do. And it actually occurred to me after I answered that question too, but I kind of danced around it when I was talking about student needs, but how have you all been able to adapt to or meet student accessibility accommodation needs? How centered has that conversation been in what you have been doing over there?
Can I start?
Yeah, go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah, I think with us at the University of West London, we want to promote as very caring about the students, yeah? And the population demographics, as they say, it's very mixed. And sometimes older people with families, young families, older families, who are full-time working people. And as I said, the common denominator was always everyone has perfect Wi-Fi and you can connect and that's it. And I had students connecting over the phones. And that was awful to hear because actually you want to give them the best, and poor guys and boys or gentlemen and ladies couldn't do that because they cannot, they don't have means to do that. So university provided, I think, emergency funds, even to the point of, not FedExing, but parcel service delivery of laptops to some challenged students, and also offering them substantial, I think, discounts on the equipment to be able to stay in touch with the classes. Yeah. It was a nice effort, actually. I think it was very, very much in favor of students, because you want, as Mark said, you want them to succeed. It's not the exercise for the technology department, for us as academics. We are here for them. Yeah, they are only once maybe in university, and we are there hopefully for years to come. Yeah,
it's a really good point, Yvonne. Don.
Yeah, I'll come in on that as well. I mean, in the UK and Europe, there's been a lot of move towards the sort of need to comply with the legislation around the accessibility directive that came out of the EU a few years ago. So a lot of the thinking initially was, we need to make our online resources accessible in as many ways as we can. So we provide it in different formats. We caption our videos. We make sure that screen readers can, you know, items can be read by screen readers, etc. But I think what a lot of this, the development of hybrid teaching spaces has done, has extended that notion of accessibility into places that weren't really considered by that legislation. Because we've had students that have been ill, we've had staff that have been ill, we've had people that, you know, that have been too concerned about the fact that they don't want to bring a deadly virus back into their household. And the ability to return to some extent to the immediacy of live teaching, but bring people in when they can't physically come in. And, you know, it takes a while to get the kit right and to get everybody's skills up to a certain standard and for people to know which direction to look in. But to be able to bring staff and students in remotely to in-person activities is, I think, being a big accessibility boon.
Just to finish off, Don, at City, there's a hardship fund that's been made available, and I think that was extended. But one of the key issues, as Yvonne said, was connectivity, people's access to technology. And that was also staff as well. You know, some staff were perched on the end of their bed with a laptop, having to deliver a class. But at City, what we've tried to do with the technology to support hybrid teaching, we came up with an acronym, which we love at City, called ILA, Inclusive Synchronous Learning Activities. And the inclusive word, as the first word, was a key part. The working title was the equitable model. So we were aiming for greater equity of experience for students online and students in class. And I'm hoping that drives us not just with the tech, as we talked about, but also the space. And that's something that I know Mark and Don and Julie, you've all picked up on. It's a holistic approach, regardless of it's being a separate pedagogy, but it's, how do we create a more accessible experience, a more equal experience, and a key, a more inclusive experience? And our guest last episode, Nigel Osland, as an environmental psychologist, gave us some really good insights into the human factor in this experience.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I ask, and Mark and Julie, I don't know if you've had the same experience, but we've had some students with our student accessibility services group, you know, express students with hearing impairments or vision impairments say that they don't want to go back to the classroom because this is so much better an experience for them. Because the faculty member has to use a microphone. So those students who have trouble hearing are getting better sound quality this way. You know, it's and it's some of those, again, I guess benefits, impacts that we didn't really think about up front. We're seeing some of the benefits of the technology in the long run too.
But you couldn't simulate one of the reasons, all these things, yeah.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I say why I'm in favor of moving towards a more hybrid sort of approach, because I think it will be by its nature more inclusive and more equitable across the board. Yeah. And I don't think I would actually say I don't think that conversation has risen high enough in either location here.
Mark.
I think the most important thing for us is to be adaptable and ready to provide whatever people need. And I think that's really our focus and our responsibility.
I think what I needed to say, but James really said what I wanted to get out earlier, and that's there's been some Herculean efforts by people in academic technology over the past couple of years. We know it, we haven't always gotten it perfect, but what we've accomplished is absolutely amazing. And I just want to give a shout out to all of the people out there who have been making this work over the past 2 years. It's really a testament to the profession.
Nice. Julie, you get the final word.
All right. So I agree. I believe that when people come together, they can accomplish just about anything. And what I didn't mention is the collaboration across all the groups was so strong during this crisis where we all had the same goal. So bringing people together from a varying amount and varying parts of the university for the same mission, anything can be accomplished.
Even academics?
Even academics.
Especially academics.
It's okay.
And that's a really positive note to end on. Thank you all very, very much for your contributions,
indeed,
your perspectives and your thoughts today. Yes.
Thank you so much.
This fascinating conversation. Just want to say all the best and I hope we get to speak to you again soon.
Thank you all very much for the opportunity. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It was great. It's great talking to you all and look forward to another opportunity in the future.
So as I said in that discussion, we have, I really enjoy these conversations. We get so much from it. Let's take our quick reflections away from that. Ivan, what was your immediate thoughts on what we discussed today?
Well, first of all, how friendly guests have been. So I think this is a really a token of appreciation in terms of America accepting us as probably a part of the world where we have to listen what they've been doing. But the sheer fact of the size and the scale they have to apply this hybrid teaching, it's something that has taken me by surprise. And to manage all these things, I think it's just a huge undertaking. That was my main takeaway. Yeah.
Yeah, scale was a big one there as well, definitely.
The figures and keeping a track of all these microphones, if nothing else.
My goodness. James, what was your snapshot takeaway?
My snapshot takeaway, Mark talked about listening to people, listening to users, listening to students, and absolutely key. And we keep coming back to that. It's not just about the tech, it's about the learning experience. But also talking about tech, and I raised the point, and Don came back and said, absolutely agreed that it's been an incredible shift and an incredible delivery of technology and facilitation through the necessity of the pandemic and the restrictions of lockdowns. It has been a massive undertaking, and with no rule book to go by, I think higher education has done an incredible job.
Hear, hear. Absolutely. Definitely. I'm going to take two comments that from Julie and from Don. Both of them made comments about the classroom. Julie talked about how important it is to know your classroom. And if you are going into to teach or even learn in one of these spaces, there's it's important to sort of prepare yourself before you go in there from a teaching point of view. Don also made the comment, which I found very interesting, about the idea of deprivileging the classroom. You know, we're so used to the lecture theatre, the seminar room, being the sort of centre where teaching and learning activities happen. But in building, constructing, in considering, conceiving of these hybrid spaces, in many ways, we are privileging the teaching and learning, and we're deprivileging the classroom. So I think that was a really interesting factor to consider.
It's all about the change in relationship. That's really important.
A balancing act on a seesaw.
So that brings us to the end of Teaching Here and There, episode 8. If you have enjoyed this episode, you can rate us or review us on Apple Podcasts, and that helps other people to find us, which is always much appreciated. You can drop us an email at teachinghereandtherepodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at @thathybridpod. Or, as one of our listeners has done, you can drop us a voice message at anchor.fm/teachinghereandthere. And if you do leave us a voice message and you would like it to be included in a future episode, then let us know. Just shout for broadcast into your voice message, and we'll make sure we weave your voice into the podcast in future, because we love to hear from our listeners as well. That's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Teaching Here and There is a podcast brought to you by PSR Production. It's available to listen to on Apple Podcasts, Anchor FM, Spotify, and any web browser.